copters. And it's about a month old, but it's still quite pertinent. You may remember up in San Francisco, the homeless are being harried from pillar to post with sweeps of Golden Gate Park, police patrols along Haight Street, threats from the mayor and the district attorney, confiscation of property, and then some homeless people have died as a consequence of the exposure because their property, their clothing, their protective gear was taken by police. Here's a story by Nina Siegel, Homes Not Helicopters, How Mayor Brown Could Solve the City's Homeless Problem If He Really Wanted To. Ever since Mayor Willie Brown canceled his widely heralded homeless summit last September, the city has heard little from the mayor about his plans to address homelessness. Mayor Brown's first homeless coordinator, Andrew Olshan, was rarely, if ever, sighted in the city's shelters and left the position in June. Brown asked Michael Wald, former director of the Department of Human Services, to be poverty czar in late December, but he resigned from the post exactly a month after his announced appointment without ever taking office. When Olshan's successor as homeless coordinator Terry Hill took over in June, Mayor Brown asked him to consider the efficacy of former Mayor Frank Jordan's five-year homeless program known as the Continuum of Care. Hill told the Bay Guardian that the plan received strong support from administrators and the nonprofit community. In September, the Continuum of Care was officially adopted by the Board of Supervisors, and Hill expects to resolve the plan by January. Brown has so far created no new programs of his own. Even the decal on the side of the city's homeless services van, one of the few visible and consistent programs designed to address the problems created by street living, still reads a project of Mayor Frank Jordan. In the meantime, the ranks of the homeless continue to swell. Estimates of the number of people living on the streets today in San Francisco range from about 5,000 to 15,000. And San Francisco's homeless population increases by at least 300 individuals a month, according to No Room at the Inn, a report sponsored by AmeriCorps, President Clinton's National Service Initiative, and published in December 1996. According to the Coalition on Homelessness, 154 people died on the street in 1996. The Bay Guardian asked several experts in the field, people who devote themselves daily to finding shelter, health care, social services, job training, substance abuse programs, and food for individuals and families living on the streets, to come up with some real solutions to homelessness. Many of their suggestions could help get thousands of people off the streets and into temporary housing within weeks or months, and some of them are long-term changes that could help stem the tide of homelessness for years to come. There is no single solution, said Calvin Welsh, nonprofit housing developer and City Hall insider. We didn't get into this situation for one reason, and we're not going to get out of it that easily. Pause briefly from this reading to take a phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Roberto.
Sir.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Now if I was coming over. Well, I looked into the dead person that washed up on the beach.
Yeah, we've actually got a report shortly after you called in. We're talking, of course, to one of Free Radio Santa Cruz's most notorious reporters, Skidmark Bob Duran.
Yes. Well, I went down to the beach, and I couldn't find any sign of anything. I asked around, and then I went over to one of the parking attendants to take your money over at the, as you enter the wharf area, mm-hmm. and she observed a body being taken from the beach, and a coroner's unit was there, and different Santa Cruz police. I called the coroner's office, and there's just a machine. I called Santa Cruz Police, and of course the sergeant will call me back. Hopefully Sergeant Crane, he's the one that was there. I talked to a couple of police officers I saw just in downtown area, and they said that Sergeant Crane was in charge of it. So hopefully he'll call on a Free Radio voicemail and give us a report of what happened and who it was. But definitely, yeah, a body did wash up on shore this morning.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we got confirmation on that one already.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
So the bodies are washing up. You never can tell. They don't stay buried. And we're hoping that's what's going to happen with the Citizens Police Review Board tomorrow. We'll find out exactly where the bodies are buried. Continuing reading this story from the San Francisco Bay Guardian of, actually, it was back in November 12th. Paul Bowden, who was once homeless himself, has been an activist for 15 years and now works with the Coalition on Homelessness. He says that during his time at the Coalition, the city has never had any long-range plan for dealing with people living on the street, but each administration has implemented short-term programs that simply responded to impending or perceived crises, like the recent debacle in Golden Gate Park. Jordan had 5 homeless coordinators in 4 years, and no one in that whole chain ever saved their files, Bowden said. That means that there is no historical institutional memory, no plan with any continuity. 1/3 of people living on the streets today are veterans of American wars. 65% of those served during the Vietnam War, according to the San Francisco-based veterans' rights organization, Swords to Plowshares. I'm going to continue this story a bit later. I'm going to interrupt it now with a direct interview on the San Francisco situation with Food Not Bombs activist and social justice activist Keith McHenry.
At the where people were hanging out, and then relatively, and there was no real public comments or hearings or anything like that. It just kind of happened at the same time as Operation Park was happening with the fence.
And they also took people's possessions? And
yeah, they took a lot of people's possessions.
And one man died of exposure after sleeping at McDonald's in early December?
At least one person, and actually new evidence has come forward in that case where it turns out that the Homeless Streetwatch program actually has videotape of Cliff Archer having his belongings, the last belongings taken from him the night before he died on Haight Street.
Wow, that's pretty serious.
That is very intense. So,
are these tweets continuing in the last week or so?
The tweets are pretty constant, and the newest thing, of course, is going to be their helicopters, and that's supposed to start any time now. The city uses its 2 helicopters to do thermal imaging.
So check for the sinister spectacle of people sleeping in hidden places in Golden Gate Park.
Right. They'll take a photograph of the park and then relay the information by computer down to Park Station so they can go out and get rid of each of the camps. And it's something that the mayor has been promoting and saying is a great idea. We had the demonstration on New Year's Eve about...
Well, before you say that, let me just kind of set the background here. In fact, the suites in the park placed a lot of people on Haight Street, which then became an increased focus of attack by conservative organizations of realtors and merchants. Is that accurate?
Right. And there's been... It's kind of, at this point, it's kind of interesting because the people that were behind Operation Park, or who were the private citizens, so-called, that were encouraging the attacks in Golden Gate Park, are now angry that the people have been moved onto their streets, and so they're now trying to lobby to have the people removed even further out of the hate.
So, is there a crackdown all over the city, or is it just in Golden Gate Park?
It is all over the city, but the main parks that is happening is Golden Gate Park and UM Plaza.
Which, coincidentally, are the 2 places where Food Not Bombs serves, right?
Right, that's exactly where we serve. And last week, when we came to serve at Golden Gate Park, the police had put up police barricades around the area where we serve, which we just removed and placed out of the way.
And did the police see you removing them?
Yeah, they didn't do anything to us, except for the head of Recreation and Parks Department, Joel Robinson, came by and yelled at me for a while and said if he saw me touching the fence again, he'd have me arrested.
And what did you do then? Did you oblige him by fondling the fence a bit?
No, not really, but I told them actually that... I actually complained to him about his lying under oath in your case. and just tried to put the focus back on his many atrocities that he himself has been personally involved in.
I remember he testified in my case, I guess it was in 1994, where I was found guilty of serving free food in violation of a court order. The only one of, over 1,000 people arrested in the last decade.
Right.
Serving free food, essentially, for allowing the spectacle of hunger and homelessness to be publicly seen in San Francisco, which is what Food Not Bombs really is partially all about, is
bringing
vivid and visual to folks who are around there, including to the officials.
Right.
So, anyway, Robinson came by and
yelled at me. I didn't end up getting arrested. Which is fortunate, and there people had unwound the fence again. It happens on each Monday, and so a lot of people were going in and out of the park and that seemed to be aggravating them. And they'd also stuck a whole new level of barbed wire and stuff on the area where we serve, and put up these new, brand new signs saying that it was danger construction site, keep out. Even though there's no construction, and there really hasn't been any. The construction idea came up after the fencing. So, I mean, there was talk of some construction in there, but they started to escalate this idea of their that the reason the fence was up is because of construction, not because of the coincidence that there's a homeless sweep on the same day.
We have a similar situation, or have had, not in Santa Cruz. They fenced off the homeless campground for a year and a half, supposedly because of the construction project that never started. Actually, it started about in September or October of last fall, but it seems like this is a way of, you know, giving substance to a fantasy and justifying what is really an unjustifiable policy of keeping people out of areas where they need to be in some cases literally to survive.
Right, this is exactly what, I mean, they did this at Civic Center Plaza in San Francisco, the same idea where they fenced off the park because they were going to renovate it, and they put in a children's, they said, well, we have to put in this children's playground, even though there's like hardly any children nearby. It's like a business area. And said that they had to do this, and then they actually had set up a daycare center at a state for state employees, and then they encouraged that daycare center to stop going to the playground that was closest to them, and urged them to now start using this other playground, so that they would that then
like the volleyball courts in Berkeley.
Right, it's the same kind of social engineering, you know, where
drive away poor and homeless people if you're making it a kind of an upscale area.
Right, yeah. And so there's no real, there's been all these, they never had any, well, the Joel Robinson, for instance, was invited to speak at all these events. And
he's the head of the Recs and Parks Department.
Yeah, he's the superintendent of Recreation and Parks Department. And he came to one of them, and all he did was say that they were going to open a bathroom on the panhandle. So one of their ideologies, actually, is that the strategy is to have the people, then people came and told me that, oh, wow, you should serve down by the bathrooms in the panhandle. That's where all the homeless people are moving. And then this Christian group started serving food over there at night. And it's kind of a, well, if we move the food over here and the bathrooms over here, then the people will move over here. And then what they'll do is there's already like a citizen group organizing to get the people out of the panhandle. So then what that was all Joel talked about was this bathroom there.
Out of the frying pan into the fire, right?
Yeah, and instead of talking about, well, what everybody wanted to know, well, why did you fence off the park? You know, are you going to really have a construction site there? And is there, and what is it that's going to be in this construction site? Since the neighborhood, you know, there's like been talk of things like a children's playground from McDonald's, like a McDonald's Happy Land or whatever. And all kinds of different wacky things. This ice skating rink, a roller skating rink.
Any burial pit for the unnecessary surplus mouths in San Francisco.
Yeah, something like that. And then last night I was out really late and taking a friend home, and I was going down Division in San Francisco, and it's like, well, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, there was something, every doorway had somebody in it. Underneath the freeway, there was, like, people all up and down the freeway, under this freeway bridge on Division. And, I mean, that's the amount of people, you know, these people were people that had kind of set up little camps with tents and stuff.
Sort of Willievilles?
Yeah, and it's, like, everywhere now. It's very, very heavy. And then the police are, like, still, you know, like Cliff Archer actually lost his last blanket and his coat on Haight Street. You know, he wasn't even in the park anymore. The police were just confiscating people's stuff on Haight.
This was on video, which the street watch program of the Coalition on Homelessness film.
Yeah, so that's like really, you know.
How did the actual demonstration go, Keith? This was, I guess, a New Year's Eve demonstration to an art festival to decorate and then, shall we say, set aside the fence.
Yeah, well, that was interesting because we had the city went out and clipped all the wires that attached the fence to the poles the night before, and did a lot of cutting, and there was lots and lots of holes cut into the fence before we even got there. Although the police, you could see it was hastily redone. You know, that there was these new wires from the outside that were stuck on, you know, something that to try to
pull the fence up
again. So as far as our strategy of pulling the whole fence down, that ended up not really working. And there was a couple of other issues surrounding that were, you know, part of the difficulty of organizing in this, you know, in a police state, basically. And
people didn't want to be arrested for pulling down the fence.
There were so many cops there. There was about 60 people showed up, which was pretty good, considering the starting and the stopping of the organizing. There's like been a lot of internal conflicts in different homeless rights groups in the city, and it's been a lot of confusion, you know. And there's been these things saying, "Well, the neighborhood doesn't want the protest to happen." Well, and so some groups like the San Francisco Freedom Bombs group actually didn't really participate because they were, you know, concerned that they'd held two other protests there and around the same issue, and then they were starting to be told that they were outside troublemakers causing problems in the neighborhood.
Did you participate yourself?
Organizing it at the time that action happened so they could formally endorse it, but had that been, you know, they probably would have formally endorsed it.
So when did the demonstration begin? Give us a blow-by.
It started at 6 o'clock, and Cala Foods parking lot was filled with cops. Just, like I said, there's probably more cops than protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put up all these signs all up and down the whole Banyan Street, denouncing the tax on homeless and so on. And the only media we had was one person from the Bay Guardian came. So there'll be something in the Bay Guardian.
Yeah, there was nothing in the Examiner or the Chronicle that I knew of.
No other media showed up. There was like, it was a really big cross section of people, and everybody there was like, "Well, we need to get more people. If we had more people, we could take this thing down." And the Senate, I talked to most of the people there, and they, because I was kind of one of the guys walking up and down asking, "Well, should we do this or should we do that?" Because, see, towards the end of the organizing effort, the very last meeting we had, because of the holidays, a lot of people didn't show up. The people that did show up were like, totally against taking down the fence and stuff.
Ah, so it was more of a conservative kind of free speech protest. It didn't involve any direct...
Yeah. So at the end, that's what ended up happening. Oh, wow, this is heavy. So that's... Oh, wow, there's a show coming up here on Friday, February 6th, a new call. It's called Zapatista Women,
mm-hmm.
sponsored by Not Bombs.
Well, civil rights for the Zapatistas, but let's not get involved with
that. No problem. There is a direct link, actually, in a certain sense, because the fencing off and the using the military helicopters in San Francisco, and that's the newest thing that's supposed to start today now. It depends on the city gets their act together. It's not the only reason that the helicopters with the thermal imaging haven't been used in Golden Gate Park yet is not because of a lack of intention by the authorities, but because of they had to first raise the $800,000 for each of the cameras, and then which they did get, the supervisor voted to give it to them, and then they had...
Was that a unanimous vote, or...?
Actually, I think there was Tom Amiano was the only, and maybe Bierman.
Mm-hmm.
Bierman spoke out most strongly against it. Amiano also spoke out against the cameras, but he in as far as accepting the helicopters, only Bierman was against the helicopters.
Camiano spoke in favor of ending the sleeping ban. He was one of the supervisors who endorsed our demonstration a year ago here at Santa Cruz City Hall.
Right, and he's still on top of that. He's having, of course, a lot of political conflicts right now. This is fantastic. Yeah.
I understand you have a new newspaper, well, not new, been around for about a year, San Francisco Frontlines, which has also been supporting homeless rights issues.
Yeah, so it's like pretty amazing, all the stuff that's going on.
So you say the demonstration started at 6, and their police outnumbered the demonstrators, and there were signs up and down the Haight, and then what happened?
Well, then we just marched around the park, actually, twice, around the area where the fence is, mm-hmm. And hung out for, and then we lit candles. We had all these candles all up in front and hung out. And then after about, by 9 o'clock, 9:30, people split. So it was kind of an uneventful action, but although it was kind of cool that so many cops were forced to come out and guard the fence, and that there were so many people that were anxious to see it come down. So hopefully it'll inspire more people to take the fence down.
Any local support from residents or owners?
That's where neighborhood council people, which, you know, maybe like 20 of them showed up. And
Jim Rhodes, perhaps?
Rhodes was there, Martha was there, Dietrich was there. Mm-hmm.
These are people who were instrumental in fighting police repression and the hate a decade ago when Food Not Bombs was being arrested.
Right, yeah, all the people that basically, the whole core of hate that was there in 1988, we're all like, wow, nothing has changed. It's all the same now. And some people were a little disappointed in the fence not being torn down. And it could have been torn down, but the problem was that because of the last meeting, there was not enough people at it that were into tearing it down to be able to organize a legal support system and stuff. So,
mm-hmm. What would have been the legal support basis for taking down the fence? As a public nuisance or what?
Oh, that it was put up without, you know, it was denying access to a public park without public participation in the decision making process.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a human rights violation, and then it was part of a very massive forced relocation of approximately 500 people or so.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in the UN has already supported us in saying that, you know, homeless, San Francisco and the homeless in the United States actually are political refugees.
When did the UN say this, and what document is this to be found?
This was in a public statement read, in which there's a transcript of which exists, that was read at the UN Human Rights Commission. They have like this thing where you get 10-minute readings. Geneva, and so the people that are investigating the attacks against San Francisco Food Not Bombs made this proclamation that from their perspective as the Commission on Human Rights for the United Nations, that what is going on with the homeless in San Francisco and in the United States is a political refugee problem.
Now, does this, in fact, represent now the position of the United Nations, or just a small subcommittee, or
the in a certain sense, it does represent the opinion of the United Nations, but it's the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations in Geneva, which is a pretty substantial aspect of the UN. Now, the big issue is to try to organize it so that the UN actually organizes sanctions. So that's like kind of the next thing that's going on, is to try to get economic blockade of the U.S. for its rights violations.
Which might be something of a tougher row to hoe.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, so that's the next thing that we're trying to organize.
Any other news from San Francisco you want to, anything coming up around, let's say, initiatives by Bierman and Supervisor Amiano to turn back this tide of, it's a blatant repression against...
Well, the interesting news locally, I think, is kind of funny. Well, the two things. One is the stuff that's going on with the scandal around the election of the ballpark and the connections there between Joel Robinson and his participation in that scam and the unfortunate coincidence of the repression against the homeless being around the same time. That's going to be really interesting. The next big phase of that is the fact that the mayor's office worked with the housing authority to use housing authority facilities to open polling booths several days early, and then also to use city funds to pay their community watch organizations to bring out the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So there's and federal funding was involved in federal facilities, so there's federal investigations starting up against election fraud against Willie Brown. So that will be somewhat fascinating if that goes anywhere. There's a lot of people. There's actually a website, which I don't know how you would find it, but there is a website. I think it might be around. If you do a search for election fraud or something, you will come across this.
And the second issue?
And the second issue that is interesting is the police the police officers association, the POA, has organized a complaint system so that officers can file complaints against the investigators at the Office of Citizen Complaints. And that's a fascinating story because that whole organizing effort is happening against the Office of Citizen Complaints. And of course, the citizens themselves in San Francisco anybody that's ever filed a complaint against the police at the OCC realizes that the OCC works for the police, not for them.
So the POA is just a bunch is sort of the extreme right wing of the police department, that sort of thing.
It's the main portion of the police department.
So they're attacking themselves when they attack the OCC, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah. Well, what it is it's, I'm certain in a sense that OCC is actually encouraging this attack by the PAO because what it does is it gives the false impression. See, I think it's a coordinated and pre-planned effort because then that makes it seem like the OCC, the Office of Citizens Complaints, which is supposed to be watching over the police misbehavior, is so strong and tough that now the patrolmen are angry about being reprimanded. Well, nothing's happened to anybody since the new and improved, you know, more highly financed, more left-wing OCC has come to power. There's like, you know, the only because of this massive organizing effort by groups like Food Not Bonds and stuff, did they even get rid of Mark Andaya after he murdered Aaron Williams.
And that didn't happen through the OCC, that happened through the police commission, right?
Well, the OCC played a role in that because they're the official body that had to bring the charges to the police commission. But it was the political organizing that got it done. If we hadn't have done all this political organizing, OCC would have been the same as any of the other OCC.
What has happened to Mark Andaya? Is he still off the force? Or?
He's off the force, but he, you know, moved to another department, some other. And I think he became a BART police officer is what happened.
Amazing. They just shuffle him around, huh?
Right, and then they just move into new killers. Well, you know, because
Mark Andaya, for those who are listening and don't know, is one of the police officers who kicked to death and otherwise pepper sprayed to death Aaron Williams in 1995, a black man who was, what was he accused of?
Oh, he was on parole. He was a parolee. And they said that he had was a suspect in a burglary that had just happened. But it turns out that the call to 911 about the burglary and the time of the stated time of the burglary is at exactly the same moment, about maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes after Mark Andaya is on the radio saying that he's at Aaron Williams' house and then he's pulling him out.
So Mark is just really kind of ahead of it, kind of a precognitive guy.
He was like a plainclothes inspector that was working in the.
So he knew his stuff. He was actually there almost before it happened.
Right, yeah. This is what's so great about the SFPD. They can arrest people before they even do the crimes.
Yeah, well, I think that's the wave of the future.
Yeah, so that's like a really heavy thing. So that kind of, I think the politics of that are fascinating, where there's going to be this OCC thing will backfire, because, I mean, I don't know anybody that's satisfied with OCC. I mean, you know, I filed, every time I'm attacked by the police, I file OCC complaints, and I didn't have but one sustained complaint so far. And
how many complaints have you filed?
Oh, probably about 20 now, maybe 25. I did a whole new series of them since the new and improved OCC started up to see if they actually were supposed to be, you know, I had my doubts whether they were new and improved, and they weren't new and improved, and I wrote all these letters to them asking if they would have, since they were new and improved, that they would meet with community activists who had, you know, a lot of contact with the police so they could learn about our perspective, and they don't even return phone calls, let alone write a letter back.
I had the same experience with the Santa Cruz Citizens Police Review Board, who tried to contact the most left-wing member, Gia Grant, and she never returned my calls. And finally, she quit the board in disgust herself. But
right.
you know, she hasn't showed up at any of the Dine hearing investigations, nor has the great liberal John Malkin, who is also, you know, supposedly concerned about police abuse, and just doesn't mention it.
Yeah, it's really, really sad, these people like them.
Yeah, he was going to be in a, on a show that video journalist Becky Johnson was running on issues around police review, canceled an hour before the show.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Keith. I know you were going to give us a lot of time. Is there more that we should know about before we let you get back to...
Well, we're having a protest in San Francisco, on, and maybe there could be a similar protest in Santa Cruz, on the anniversary of the arrest of Leonard Peltier, and that's on February 6th. And,
Leonard Peltier is...
But it's starting up, you know, with the new counterterrorism task force in the Bay Area, and all the different new surveillance gadgets that have been, given by the Defense Department to the Justice Department.
Any updates on Homes Not Jails and the Presidio housing for the homeless, the Wary housing that, I guess, I went to jail twice last year trying to...
I don't know of any updates. I think, you know, since a lot of that is religious witness with homeless people in the Wary housing... Thing.
Homes Not Jails as well.
Homes Not Jails is, I've not talked to Homes Not Jails.
Well, I know you yourself were arrested when you tried to talk to Barbara Boxer about the...
Or Nancy Pelosi, actually, yeah.
I'm sorry, Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, I was standing there, and her nun, her aide, had said, yeah, I get to, you could speak to Pelosi, and there was like this whole line of us waiting, and I conveniently kept getting pushed out of the way by Secret Service itself.
Has Pelosi or Boxer, any of the politicians at the top, taken any action that you know of around Wary housing that would make this 400 and, I don't know...
Wait, well, there's 444 housing units there.
Something like that.
And then there's like another 600 housing units over at Alameda Naval Air Station that are being destroyed to build condominiums there.
Really? I hadn't heard about those.
Treasure Island, there was like a temporary thing where homeless people were allowed to live at Treasure Island for a while, but now that's getting whittled down to it's only 18 months.
Well, her Treasure Island was rented out for the New Year, for the New Year's Eve by the city, something like that?
Yeah, there's like, yeah, they, when they're renting it to like Universal Studios and things like that.
They're renting it out to some rave group or something like that, is what I heard.
Yeah, it's like, well, there's all kinds of things that the city's doing with Treasure Island right now, and none of it is really for the homeless. I mean, you have this token thing.
So this is in the midst of a crisis where they're actually, you know, driving people away from parks and using $800,000 helicopters, or I guess not, it's more than that. It's,
well, it's 800,000 thermal imaging
cameras and helicopters.
Oh, they're 800.
What, 20, 30, I don't know how much a helicopter costs.
Helicopters were like, I think we had to spend $5 million to refurbish them is what the city paid.
So it's amazing the contradictions, because the amount of money being spent to drive homeless from one point of the city to the other and then from that point back to the first,
right,
instead of using available housing to make, you know, to put people into housing, it just boggles the mind. I was reading recent articles in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, otherwise a progressive, left-wing, you know, concerned publication. And we got columnist Rob Anderson there denouncing the Bay Guardian, denouncing Food Not Bombs, an activist in San Francisco, for claiming that the parks should be used for people to live in, or people should be allowed to live there. Let me ask anything about that. Do you have any sense of why a progressive newspaper like the Anderson Valley
And you were listening to Keith McHenry in an interview a couple days ago, around the beginning of the new year. Keith is a Food Not Bombs, well, kind of a archetypal towering figure in Food Not Bombs and in the effort to fight for rights for homeless people in San Francisco. And he was talking about the Defense the Park demonstration and other stuff. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz yourself at 96.3 FM, as you may already know. If you don't, you should also be told that there is a call-in number if you want to get in touch talking about anything you've heard or stuff you haven't at 423-5361. 423-5361. The phone lines are open. You want to discuss anything. Here's a story from the San Francisco Examiner about a week ago. Lady Luck won't sleep with the homeless. Freezing weather turns city shelters into long shot lottery with too few beds. Carl, a 44-year-old man who began living on the streets when he lost his job, has virtually given up playing, quote, the homeless lottery. I tried to get in shelters two or three times a week, but it doesn't work, he said, as he panhandled in downtown San Francisco on a chilly Saturday afternoon. I used to play the lottery every day. I don't ever win. The lottery's not fair. They should give everybody a chance. Bone-chilling Arctic air has permeated the Bay Area the past few nights, causing homeowners to turn up their thermostats to stay warm. Meanwhile, the homeless scramble for too few beds, additional blankets, jackets, and cardboard to stay warm in a lottery that really doesn't pay that well. The prize, a night or two off the streets. Those who lose the lottery or refuse to play hunker down in doorways, parks, alleys, and beds made of boxes, cast-off blankets, and clothes. Some show up at emergency rooms with minor complaints they hope will translate into a warm bed. And I might add to this story, some show up dead on the parking lot of McDonald's. The coroner's office is looking into the death of a man found Saturday lying on an iron slab in a construction site in Door Alley near Bryant Street. Police said it was unclear how the man died or whether the cold weather was a factor. The man found when investigators searched the site for witnesses to a nearby fire was in a makeshift sleeping bag fashioned from plastic garbage bags, his portable radio still pouring music into his headphones, said Officer Rob Terry. You see these guys lying everywhere, Terry said. Usually they make a shelter, but he had nothing to shield him from the cold. We know that shelters only have limited space, and they get full on cold nights, so people make space in shelters. That is, when his fellow officers aren't driving them away from their shelters in Golden Gate Park and elsewhere. Saturday night temperatures were expected to drop into the 30s again. In suburban Contra Costa and Sonoma counties, the National Weather Service said it could dip into the 20s and possibly in the teens. I'm cold now, Carl said Saturday afternoon. When the sun goes down and the wind blows, it makes it worse. You can freeze your butt off. While Mayor Brown says there is space and bedding to be found for those who want it, homeless advocates say that isn't the case. A survey conducted by homeless advocates on November 21st, before the cold snap, found that an average of 1,200 people are turned away each month from six shelters funded by the city. But a major problem, say homeless people on the streets Saturday, is determining where the openings are. For instance, Episcopal Sanctuary of Trinity Episcopal Church has had beds open during the latest cold spell, but the shelter's supervisor, Keith Casey, is not permitted to discuss anything regarding the shelter. It's just policy, he said. The city's homeless coordinator, Terry Hill, said recently he hopes to create a central referral service for outreach workers to use to target where beds are available for clients. But meanwhile, trying to score in a shelter lottery has become a long odds raffle ticket that in extreme cases can mean death for those on the streets in near freezing temperatures. And in fact, they are talking about a real lottery. That's what you do. You have to play in a lottery to determine if you'll get a shelter bed in San Francisco. There's like 5% of the homeless population has access to shelter beds. They ought to let you stay a week, then switch off, Carl said. He started living on the streets about the same time his now late wife was diagnosed with cancer. The same people get in the shelters. They got to do something about that. If you're lucky, said Paul Bowden of the Coalition on Homelessness, you'll get one for three nights or seven nights. Otherwise, on these freezing nights, you'll hang out at a drop-in center and hope somebody leaves to get a pack of cigarettes, he said. And the chances of that are about the same as winning the California lottery. So you pull on as many layers of clothing as you can, grab plenty of cardboard, and hide out, and avoid the cops at all costs, he said. Shelter beds available 2 weeks ago have been filled as the temperature has dropped into the 30s and in the 20s in Contra Costa County. With shelter beds filled, Bowden said homeless people have turned to the emergency room at San Francisco General as a place for temporary shelter out of the cold. Of course, when they determine there is no medical ailment, they have security guards kick you out, Bowden said. Outreach workers have tried to increase the number of blankets, jackets, and sleeping bags they give out in the streets on recent nights, but Bowden said police are confiscating the homeless people's possessions. It's a real catch-22, Bowden said. If they don't claim, they take it. If they do claim, they get an $80 ticket for camping. Police say they are bound to enforce the law and are not singling out the poor or the homeless. At a Board of Supervisors hearing last month, Deputy Police Chief Richard Holder said almost 2,000 citations have been issued for camping in the park this year. More than 100 citations were issued for sleeping in the park, and about 650 for disregarding park signs. Your fearless talk show host leader here has gotten one of those tickets. Got one a month ago, disregarding park signs. That's being in the park after dark. Carl, who was bundled up Saturday in a sweatshirt, two jackets, a heavy top coat, and a wool cap, and an oversized gym bag containing a sleeping bag at his side, said the police rousted him and a man in the wheelchair last month. Caller, hang on. We've got an incoming phone call. We just got a little bit more to read, and then I'll pick up your call. It was raining and the cops made me move, he said. I had permission from the owner and still they made me move. It was a tailor shop on Kearney. I talked to the owner. And he gave me and my friend who was in Vietnam, he's in a wheelchair, permission to sleep in the store's doorway. It was raining and cold and the cops said the city owned the space, Carl continued. They didn't take my stuff and we just moved after he made us move. And that's a story from the San Francisco Examiner, which has had a four-part series on homelessness starting on December 28th. I actually read another part earlier. And you, well, we have a phone caller here. Let's see what he said.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, and I was listening to your talk about the lack of homeless shelters.
Uh-huh.
And I was once a phone volunteer to take crisis calls for battered women.
Uh-huh.
And just like there's no homeless shelters, just an acute lack of shelters, you know, for battered women. A lot of times these women are in life-threatening situations, and they literally have no place to go. And it seems like there's a large amount of homeless people that are battered women who have fled violent households, violent relationships.
Uh-huh.
And much in the same way, I also read that many homeless are ex-Vietnam vets that come back with psychological problems, and I'm just sickened at the callousness of this country that uses these guys, and then when the war is over, they just dump them on the street just like they're so much garbage.
Exactly.
And I'm so angry because our military budget, I mean, this year they allocated an extra $13 billion with a B,
mm-hmm.
more than the military even asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And so this chronic lack of shelters and all this suffering going on is more tragic because the money is there, but the will is not there to take care of business. And I appeal to anybody listening who's a vet or anybody organized with battered women's crisis issues. You know, veterans should complain to the VA and raise the holy stink about this because it's just completely immoral.
Well, the more stink, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, no question about it. And even more ironic than the lack of shelter is the local response, which is by our liberal city council, which is to criminalize people in public spaces, to criminalize sleeping at night, and to make it a $162 ticketable offense to be caught with a blanket around you trying to stay warm in rains and hail like we've had for the last couple hours here in Santa Cruz at night after 11 o'clock, which, of course, is one of the reasons why the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban got together and is putting forward its initiative, which I'll remind listeners, if you want to support this initiative and gather signatures, and homeless people, by the way, can get money for getting verifiable signatures. We've gotten a donation from some folks, and you can get 25 cents a signature. The number to call to help out with this effort is 457-9754, extension 182. Again, 457-9754, extension 182. And there are even greater ironies here. When homeless people try to shelter themselves, like in their own vehicles, they're, of course, driven away, driven out. What it boils down to, as you saw up in Eureka when they evicted several hundred from the South Spit Jetty, where they'd lived for a decade, many of them, and what's happening in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, and what's happening in Santa Cruz, where you have a situation where even with the armory open, it'll only take care of a quarter of the homeless people at most on any particular night. And of course, during the most of the year, there's you know, shelter beds, shelter floor space, I should say, for less than 45 people, usually less than 30, out of a population of 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz. It's really an attempt to criminalize and disperse a population, similar to the ethnic cleansing that happens in different parts of the world, like Bosnia and in Central Africa. It's not taken with guns most of the time or with violence, but the message is still the same. Get out of town. And you can even hear it in the genteel claims of people like Mike Rotkin, who's the swing vote on the city council, who could change our sleeping ban at the next council session if he wanted to. And that is, we have too many people here already. Go away. We don't want our town to be a magnet. Homeless people are not welcome here. And more than that, even our own homeless are not welcome if they sleep in public spaces. They must hide very well if they want to not get ticketed or arrested. And that is the current situation we have here, and one that we're trying to change. Our call-in lines are open for those who want to call in. This is the last, last 7 or 8 minutes of Bathrop's Pierce Broadsides. I had hoped to play you some taped interviews with Santa Monica activist Jennifer Wagoner and our local attorney for the people, Anthony Bowl, who we'll have to play. Hopefully we'll have time to play him on Thursday when Bathrop Spears Broadsides will return at its 6 o'clock time slot. 6 to 8 is our time slot on Thursday, and you're still listening to 96.3 FM. And after my show, you're going to have the return of that bad woman, Becca. Reckless is going to be back, as she calls herself. She's been away for a while. Now she's back in town, and probably twice as feisty. She's got stuff from New York City's Free Radio and Steal This Radio, they call themselves. I'm sure she'll have got some interesting things for you to listen to. Here's an article that I began to read in an earlier show, never had a chance to finish, called about the vehicularly housed residential community, which is a fancy way of saying people who sleep and live in their vans and their cars. And there's, of course, lots of people in San Francisco who are doing that. It's a way to be able to survive since if you can't pay the inflated rents. You heard about those rents earlier. And, of course, these people are criminalized as well. In Santa Cruz, for instance, it's illegal to sleep in your vehicle. Even if you're trying to sleep off a drunk or you're a traffic hazard, it's a crime, $162 crime to fall asleep in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night. But it's not a crime to cover up with blankets in your vehicle, so it's a crime if you step outside your vehicle to cover up with blankets after 11, but if you got a car, you can stay awake all night, covered up with blankets, and that is, in fact, legal. So I talked to Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, Michael Hernandez, and all the other folks at 429-3550, which is the city council that keeps the law that way. Here's an article, Vehicularly Housed Residential Community, a New Alternative to Homelessness by the Vehicularly Housed Residential Association. There are currently hundreds of houseless people who sleep in their vehicles throughout San Francisco, one step away from a doorstep or park bench. While these vehicularly housed people have found a way to stay off the street, they continuously face displacement. Each successive relocation creates not only the potential for loss of homes, it also poses serious health risks for the individual and the community at large. In September 1996, a group of San Franciscans who live in their vehicles, predominantly in the China Basin area, began to meet on a regular basis to respond to the various pressures related to the hardship of street life. These vehicular residents asked the Coalition on Homelessness to help develop strategies to address their housing situation, and out of these initial meetings, the Vehicularly Housed Residential Association, VHRA, was formed. This partnership represents a unique and exciting grassroots effort. Over the past 6 months, the VHRA and the COH, Coalition on Homelessness, developed the Vehicularly Housed Residential Community, VHRC, concept. The VHRA established ongoing relationships with the Mayor's Office on Homelessness and the Department of Public Health, leading to the establishment of an advisory board in September of 1997, which was formed to further refine the proposal and find an appropriate site for the project. The project is envisioned to provide an innovative new alternative to living on the streets by creating a thriving, stable, and diverse living option that is free from the ongoing dangers associated with street life. It is designed around the conversion of unused property into a site where vehicularly housed people can park their vehicles in a safe and clean environment, complete with basic amenities and services. The cornerstone to the project's success is the active role that tenants have and will continue to play in its development. This project combines community and self-determination with job creation and training to stabilize and improve the living conditions of its residents. A strong commitment to tenant economic development and training furthers our goal of creating a self-sufficient low-rent living option. This is a pilot project with the goal of developing several such sites throughout the city. The key features of the vehicularly housed residential community include creation of a self-supporting housing option that facilitates mutual support and empowerment with the goal of stabilizing and improving the living conditions of its residents to transition into permanent affordable housing. Conversion of a presently unused plot of land into rental spaces for approximately 6 to 9 vehicle dwellings. The provision of basic amenities including showers, bathrooms, black water disposal, water, mail service, lighting, and garbage pickup. Tenant employment and training and the improvement of the partially improved land and ongoing economic development opportunities, including job creation and training, in order to sustain the economic viability of the lot and create employment opportunities. Creation of a community space for events and services, including collaboration with local service providers to bring voluntary services on-site, e.g. health care provided by Health Care Clinic Consortium. The development of a community handbook of rules and regulations to facilitate an ordered and respectful living situation, including rules regarding eligibility, rent expectations, dispute resolutions, tenant rights, and other guidelines. Active partnership between residents, nonprofit agencies, service providers, and the city. Ironically, after this document was written, sounds kind of like somebody's trying to get a grant here and did, and what they say doesn't sound bad, police were still towing away these people's vans and vehicles as fast as they could. And you may have heard about that in an interview which I did about 2 months ago, where the head of this organization, a woman named Ginny Apollos, an older woman who has got lots of brass, was describing how police began towing away vehicle after vehicle. We're talking about people's homes here. At the same time, at the mayor's office was making sounds about how this new organization was such a wonderful thing and they were going to cooperate with it. We also have a story from Buena Park. Buena Park, you may know, is the Southern California suburban area in Orange County where Reverend Wiley Drake was convicted of housing homeless people in his church. Drake is a Baptist minister whose right-wing sentiments led him to boycott the Disney enterprises for a number of reasons, so-called pro-family values. They were not, according to Drake. I don't much agree with his boycotting of Disney and all that stuff, though I might boycott Disney for another reason. But, you know, he was talking about, not only do I not much agree with it, I completely disagree that he had concerns about benefits for gay partners, which I think is preposterous and bigoted. But on the homeless issue, Drake really hits the center of the target. He was going to go to jail to continue to house 70 homeless people in his church. And here's the latest update. 80 homeless people have a warm Christmas and New Year's thanks to a court ruling in a case that put charity in conflict with city codes. The Reverend Wiley Drake of the First Southern Baptist Church, on 3 years probation for violating zoning laws by housing homeless people at the church, has been given until January 4th to pare down the population to 52 from the current 80. Wow, that's today. Haven't heard from him today. We'll see if he has. The good news is we don't have to kick anybody out over the holidays, Drake said. The bad news, he said, is that about 30 people will eventually have to leave. Most of the homeless spend nights in an enclosed patio behind the main church buildings. The church also provides cots, food, clothing to hundreds who don't sleep here. Wow. And we're going to be hearing a goodbye tape because we have just received our... Our host is here, and we have to get out of here.
How's it going, Santa Cruz?
Hey, she's bad, and she's back. This is a song by Cornerstone Carol Denny, activist in Berkeley, whose birthday was just 3 days ago, about the North County Jail. It speaks for itself. I hope you will speak for yourself and call the Citizens Police Review Board before their meeting on Monday at 5:30 at 429-3262 in order to give your input in the Happy John Dine case. Also, show up at that meeting at 915 Cedar Street. They can use your input. And if you have any questions about numbers that I've given you on the air or thoughts that you might want to pass on to listeners, give me a call at 423-HUFF. And please, stay tuned for the show that is to come called...
Fucking It Up in a Fucked Society.
Fucking It Up in a Fucked Up Society. And please, tune in again at 6 o'clock on Thursday for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and we will continue with 2 more hours of fun and nonsense.
People's Park is over and volleyball is freedom. I saw the light at the North County Jail. Free speech doesn't matter and property is holy. I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light. I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light. I saw the light at the North County Jail. Chalking is defacement and roses are a weapon. I saw the light at the North County Jail. Fuji is a martyr and Dilbeck is a hero. I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light. I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light at the North County Jail. We need more police and they are only here to help you. I saw the light at the North County Jail. This world would be better if more people were in prison. I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light at the North County Jail. I saw the light, I saw the light, I saw the light at the North County Jail.